You are listening to Pure Opelka
with Mike Opelka.
I'm coming out of the blocks this Monday, just on fire, ready to go. I'm ticked off. And I'm ticked off about something that's happening locally here in Delaware, but I fear it could spread nationally. The education department in Delaware has proposed a new regulation, Regulation 225, if you're keeping score at home, and it will allow Delaware children, students, to, quote, self-identify, close quote, meaning select their gender and their race without their parents' knowledge or consent. Not kidding. The proposed regulation is set up to prevent parents from actually knowing whether or not their child has selected a different gender or a different race. They set the parents up here as being unsupportive and discriminatory, and in some cases, even abusive. Yeah, that's right. They're claiming the parents can be considered abusive if they fail to affirm their child's choice of gender and or race. It's insane. I have reached out to someone from the organization DelawareFamilies.org in order to try and get their comment on this, but it is stupid. The new regulation ignores biological differences between the sexes in competitive sports. So if you're a girl and playing on a girl's team and some guy wants to identify as a female and play on your team, they have to allow that. Think about it. It's insane. Apart from the insanity, and maybe in addition to the insanity, there's something else bigger going on here. Something I believe is happening underneath the surface of this stupid regulation. I believe, and I believe this in the core of my heart and soul, that this kind of rule and regulation is meant to help separate the parent from the child so the state can assume that role. I do believe that. Think about it. The parents, the people responsible for creating this beautiful gift of humanity that God has given us, the parents charged with the responsibility of raising that child until they are of their majority, a legal member of our society at age 18, although some would have you believe they have to stay at home until they're 26 and be on their parents' coverage for everything else until they're 26. The age of consent, the age of legality, the age of being of their majority is still 18. But this starts separating the child from the parent at a very early age by setting up an adversarial relationship between the parent, who is the guardian, who is legally responsible for that child and their upbringing, and puts it squarely in the hands of the state. This is the creeping progressive Sharia, if you will. It is a religion of progressivism that is meant to take over from the parent and put total control of that child in the hands of the government. Parents, pay attention. I promise you I will follow up on the Delaware story and make sure that I raise my voice and get others to participate. But I want to encourage you to get involved as well, because it is only through getting involved and staying involved that we actually prevent more of this insanity from spreading. For example, on October 30th, just 2 weeks ago, a dad asked his seventh grade son, an 11-year-old boy, "What did you learn in school today?" And the kid said, "Well, we got this." And he handed him a 4-page pamphlet called Gender Identity. The father went over the pamphlet and almost lost his mind. When you hear how he describes some of the things he found in the pamphlet, I think you'll agree with him. The result was a video on Facebook that went viral almost immediately. It's been seen almost a million times already. And a reaction from the school. The school in Cambridge, New York, has suspended the teacher, put the health ed instructor on administrative leave because of the gender identity lesson, and hundreds of parents have stepped up. The man responsible, the guy who put out the Facebook Live video, Sorrell Feel. Sorrell Feel, I tip my cap to you, sir, a truck driver who stays involved in his kids' lives. Mr. Feel's Facebook Live video, the first Facebook Live video he's done, is quite compelling. It's 10 minutes long. I'm going to give you some of the highlights, some of my favorite parts. But I love this guy's emotion. I love his dedication to his kids. And he started out by asking people to indulge him, since it was his first Facebook Live video. But then he goes into asking his son, "What did you learn in school today?"
Well, we had someone come into class today that... it doesn't have a gender. It's not a boy nor a girl. And we're going to go over this in health class. We got the gingerbread man, gingerbread person there, the transgender. Tells you all the fun stuff about biological sex and romantic and gender identity.
Mr. Feel held up one of the pages of the pamphlet, and it has the gingerbread person. And it's a gingerbread man, but it's not a man. It's a person. Without a gender. And it goes into detail on how you can understand the various genders. This guy is trying to be accepting. He's trying to say that I know there are gay people in the world. There are people who are different. He's very accepting. And he just wants the opportunity to be able to be a parent to his child. He wants the schools, using his tax dollars, to teach kids what schools are supposed to teach them, and not to get into social engineering. It's inspiring to see this guy, because he really does take a common sense, hands-on approach to the situation. And because he did so, this teacher was suspended. All throughout the Facebook video, the initial one, Sorrell Field talked about how it was a parent's responsibility to educate the children.
When it comes to teaching our kids certain things, you know, that should be left up to us, not the school districts, not the health, not health class in seventh grade, no.
What this gentleman does do on this video is give you concrete examples and show you how you as a parent can bring those examples to the school's attention. He went through the pamphlet page by page, starting with the vocabulary words. I love the way he breaks this down. Check it out.
Let me go into common terms and definitions. Now, this is what gets me teed off right here. Because as a father, as I have a little girl too, and I'll tell you, I'd be just as irate with her, if not more. Because this is something that I should be teaching. This is something that you should be teaching your own kid. I don't believe in the school having to teach our kids about this stuff. We've got over 50 plus different vocabulary words.
You should know that the child, the 11-year-old, was told to study these 50 vocabulary words because there was going to be a test the next day. A test on gender identity and on the vocabulary, everything. What could be wrong with the vocabulary test? Listen to one of the examples.
And we goes into, you know, going into the bottom now. A bottom. So let's check it out. A person who is said to take more submissive role during sexual interactions, sometimes referred to as passive, in lay American cultures, also known as a catcher. So this is something my 11-year-old definitely does not need to know in health class in seventh grade, nor should your daughter or anybody else. I don't think so.
Totally agree. I think I was 24 or 25 before I even heard the term bottom or catcher as it relates to sex. Not an 11-year-old, not a seventh grader. Mr. Field points out even more objectionable words.
I mean, are you serious right now? On the down low, we got picked up another one. The down low, on the DL, it's adopted by some African-American men who seek the same-sex relations but don't identify as gays. Now, you're going to tell me that this is something that our kids need to know in 7th grade to pass 7th grade health class? This is stuff that our kids, 11 years old, 7th grade, don't need to be learning in school. When they get a couple years old, they want to come home, they learn it from me. I'm their father. I'm the one that teaches them this kind of stuff. Not you. Not you in health class in 7th grade. I don't think so. Especially when we're going over the different terms over the fluids and the fluid or fluid, sexual fluids and the mixings of them. Are you serious? Are you kidding me?
No, the school was not kidding, and they were quite serious. The entire text of the pamphlet was posted on his Facebook page. He took pictures of the pages. First of all, I don't know if I would pass this test, and it's so damn confusing. But again, we're not teaching kids actual skills like math and science. We're now going into social engineering because political correctness has overtaken all of our schools. It is maddening. But God bless this guy. God bless him for speaking clearly and honestly. And again, he posted this video on his Facebook page, Sorrell Feel, and it's been seen almost a million times. The school had to react. They had to stop. Why? Because most of the parents had the exact same feelings he had. Feelings he expressed when he read sections of the pamphlet like this one on packing.
This is packing, the process of creating a man-looking bulge in one's crotch. This can be accomplished through a homemade or store-bought pant stuffer or through a realistic-looking prosthetic device. A packing device may be referred to as a packer or packy or as an STP packer. It also can be used to pee through while standing up. STP, stand to pee. Some guys simply refer to their packer or their prosthetic as
beep.
Balls and
beep.
Are you freaking kidding me?
No, we are not freaking kidding you. The video continues.
And my kids don't need to know about all these surgeries in different ways. I mean, it goes into lower surgeries. See, genital reconstruction surgery. Is that really something that our 11-year-old kids should be learning and knowing about? No, I don't think so. Vaginoplasty. This is how they, and it goes into a whole thing about surgically creating a vagina, and it goes in depth on how to do it, because that's something that your 11-year-old daughter or son should know. Now, they're going to go over this tomorrow in class, and they're going to have a test on it. And I'll tell you right now, my kid's not going to be sitting in this class. This right here, this is state-funded porn.
Absolutely, 100% spot on, sir. Well done. Well done, Sir Elfiel. I salute you for doing this. And you must have struck a chord because the school actually, as we said earlier, suspended the teacher pending an investigation. God bless you, sir. As it is Monday here on the Pure Opelka podcast, that means we get to check in with our friend, legal expert, author, and all-around great person, Dr. Wendy Patrick. Check out her work at wendypatrickphd.com. I think I see the Pure Opelka hotline ringing. Fresh from her latest adventure in Disney World, I saw you wearing your ears in front of Cinderella's castle. Our friend, author, lawyer, just all around good person, Dr. Wendy Patrick. WendyPatrickPhD.com, people, go there. Hi, Wendy. How was the Magic Kingdom?
You know, it's always a pleasure. It was really a great time to spend with family, friends and family in Orlando. And yeah, a whirlwind weekend. But you know what? You got to do it, Mike, when you have schedules with like you and I have, don't you?
I endorse your running around the country lifestyle. I think it's great.
I think you have the same lifestyle, Mike.
Shh, keep that down. So also traveling, not just this past weekend, but for the past 12 days, is the President of the United States and pretty much the airborne Oval Office. But the President's trip, especially this weekend, was filled with some real interesting stuff, especially when you relate it back to something you mentioned to me before this conversation, that the art of the deal was kind of on display this weekend, wasn't it?
Oh, Mike, in grand fashion, you know, and you and I have talked about this many times, it has long been speculated by Trump supporters that some of his behavior is more calculated and strategic than it appears on its face. And part of that has to do with his diplomatic relations. And case in point was illustrated over the weekend. One of the things that the president did that really took the wind out of the sails for some of his detractors is basically sided with our intelligence agencies, at least more so than he ever has in the past. What he's trying to do is make nice with Putin, and I'm sure you saw the photos of them dressed alike in their matching shirts and the photos from Vietnam. Of course, they had to do that. It was ceremony, et cetera. But it draws this attention to the fact that those two men really have bonded, and many of Trump's detractors say, well, gosh, he shouldn't be nice to Putin. Putin meddled in the election, et cetera. And what the president did over the weekend is basically said, I believe that our law enforcement agencies, I side with them. I don't necessarily believe Mr. Putin. However, I believe that Putin believes Putin. Now, you can't have it both ways. If you know, the Russian president meddled, he obviously knows he did. But you know, Donald Trump has got to walk a fine line here, because it is true that he does have to get along with other countries in order to battle forces like North Korea. But it's also true that he has to side with America in basically accepting the findings of our intelligence agencies. What you saw over the weekend, Mike, was his ability to try to do both. How did that come across? Depends on who you ask. Looks to me like it broke down along party lines.
Absolutely broke down along party and ideological lines. And one of the things I always point to when you're president, any president, could be Trump, could have been Obama, the people that don't like you are going to find every fault they can and highlight it. And for
sure, you're not going to win.
That's right. You can't. And once you go in accepting that, if you stick to your plan and your principles, then nothing's going to get in the way. And in this case, for the past 10 months of this administration, what have we been hearing? He's not presidential. He's not presidential. He's not. And then he goes out and he acts like a diplomat on the world stage, surrounded by leaders of some of the biggest, most powerful countries on the planet, China and the Soviets, or the Russians now. And even in the case of the economic strength of South Korea and Japan, he's a diplomat. And what happens? Well, he's criticized. He wasn't strong enough with the Russians. Well, I also point out, Wendy, he signed the sanction orders. Russia has been economically hurt by the orders Donald Trump signed. If he was in Vladimir Putin's party tent, he would not have signed those sanctions.
Right. No, that's a great point. And this point we don't talk about. And even when we do, you know, a lot of the detractors come back and say, yeah, but he's not really enforcing them. And, you know, but remember, Vladimir Putin reacted to those sanctions by cutting the American staff. And he, you know, did some more things that obviously indicated his displeasure, shall we say, about having been sanctioned. But it is also true that international relations start with diplomacy. And this is where it all comes back to the art of the deal. Even over the weekend, you saw the president twice talk about wanting to be friends with Kim Jong-un. Do you remember that coverage?
Yes.
And, you know, it's interesting, Mike, that it was against the backdrop of Kim Jong-un calling the president, quote, old, and then Trump comes back and say, yeah, well, okay, I didn't call him short and fat. Okay, that's like sandbox stuff. But remember the greater context in which that discussion was had. It was surprising to many that President Trump said, I would like to be friends, I would like to make nice. I'm paraphrasing because, of course, he's so blunt, I probably wouldn't repeat some of the way he says it on the air. But he was very pointed that it would be possible, if he had anything to say about it, that the two men would talk and that the two men would maybe try to get along. And if you look at Trump's history, these are some of the tactics he's used by his own admission in his books throughout the year. So maybe we should, you know, be hopefully optimistic. What is that, President Bush? Right? Cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
That, you know, let's see where these relationships go and let's prepare for the worst, but hope for the best.
And I do. You're so right. And I think if you look at the overall progression from Rocket Man and the total annihilation to, you know, I wouldn't have called him short and fat, and I hope we can be friends. You know that's going to drive Kim Jong-un crazy. And in fact, the state media put out another response from the dear leader referring to President Trump as a dotard. You know, that's the Korean word for an old crazy person is a dotard.
Right.
And they keep using it every time they refer to President Trump. But I believe he's now gotten him in a good place for negotiation. So I'm taking a wait and see attitude too. And I also believe we're going to hear, as we've kind of heard a hint from the White House staff, when they arrive back home on Wednesday, we're going to hear about all the trade deals, because a lot of people are pointing fingers at the president and saying, you didn't announce any big trade deals. And since you pulled us out of TPP, they're going on without us. Well, I'm one of those people who didn't like TPP, and I'm real happy that we're not in it. So I'm excited to hear there may be some bilateral trade deals that get announced Wednesday. Have you heard anything in advance of that?
I would say, I always want to wait and hear it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak, because we always hear all kinds of rumors and tweets in advance. But one of the things we've learned in an era where you can't believe everything you read is, let's wait for the official statement. And like you say, see if it in fact is going to be good news.
I love speculation. And that's why we get along, Wendy. I know you know that.
Yin and yang. That's
yeah,
that's
good. That's absolutely right. Well, I'll keep watching that. I know you're running crazy on this Monday because you were out having fun all weekend, and you usually work all weekend, so you got to play catch up.
Mike, I also worked all weekend. You know me. I worked all weekend while I was there. It's just one of those things where you just got to keep up. You got to burn the candle on both ends some of the time, because that's life, isn't it?
It is. And those are the candles we've been given. So, all right, Wendy, have a great rest of your day.
You as well. Bye-bye.
Yesterday, Sunday, was the one-week anniversary of the horrific shooting at the First Baptist Church in Texas, the one that took the lives of more than two dozen people and injured so many more. And I have to tell you, that inspired today's vital question. Well, that horrific attack and some of the reaction to it. Today's vital question on my Twitter account, at StuntBrain, asks, if a church invited its members to bring their firearms, legal firearms, into the service, would you worship there? Would you attend? Would you worship at a church that would allow parishioners to bring in their legal firearms? Well, currently more than 90% of you say yes. And this was also sparked by the Lighthouse Mexico Church of God in Oswego County, New York, just a little bit north of Syracuse. It's at that church, which calls itself, quote, the most upbeat church in upstate New York. They posted a pro-gun message on the sign in front of the church. You know, the little signs you always see in front of a church. It says, we say it again, we are not a gun-free zone. We say it again, we are not a gun-free zone. So even in New York State, I know New York City, it's impossible to basically exercise your Second Amendment rights. But in New York State, north of Albany, the capital, there is a church telling parishioners, it's okay to bring your guns to church, to service. But I want to know how you'd feel about it. So go to Twitter, follow me at StuntBrain. You can also follow at Pure Opelka, but it's posted on my StuntBrain account. How do you feel about that? Would you attend services at a church where parishioners were encouraged to bring their legal firearms with them? A little bit of a topical sidebar here. I'm going to use the host privilege and tease something coming up later this week. We have in the past talked with Phil Lempert, the supermarket guru, on a regular basis. And Phil wants to come back. His schedule's just been a little crazy. I have to ask him about a couple of trends that are happening and about this story that au bon pain and Panera Bread are merging and what it means. What does it mean to the entire food universe? Plus, our friend Carl Ruiz, the Mad Cuban, he's a great guy and a terrific chef. He's doing a lot more work with Guy Fieri on some of Fieri's new shows. Carl gave me a tip, a cooking tip, that I have to share with you. I got a real expensive cut of meat as a gift. And this cut of meat also has me nervous because I don't want to screw it up. You know, it's a It's a brisket, but it's like $200 worth of brisket. It's really expensive. And I want to make it, but I don't want to mess it up. He said sous vide. Sous vide. And I don't know sous vide from Sue Opelka, my sister. So I asked, and he said, sous vide, look it up, check it out, you'll do it. And he explained that sous vide is a technique of cooking meat or just about anything using hot circulating water. So I did my research, I checked it out, I found a basic sous vide cooker. It was about $100, and it is a miracle. I will tell you this, I tested the sous vide cooker, not on the $200 piece of meat, because I didn't want to screw it up. I tested it on a simple flank steak, a simple, inexpensive cut of meat, a flank steak. And here's how it works. You decide what temperature of meat you would like, rare, medium, well done, overdone, whatever you want. And you season the meat and you put it in a bag, like one of those boil-in bags that you would maybe freeze something and then boil it later. And you put it in the bath of warm water that is set to the temperature of the meat that you desire. For example, I wanted a rare cut of meat after it was cooked. And the sous vide cooker takes care of business. Now, it doesn't cook it as fast, but it cooks it perfectly. I will tell you this, edge to edge, it is cooked perfectly. And after, in this case, I think it was about 40 minutes. After 40 minutes in the sous vide bath, you take it out. I have a grill pan. I put a little bit of olive oil in the grill pan and hit it on both sides on the hot grill pan, and it made the grill marks, you know, browning the outside of the meat. It was perfectly cooked. It was the most tender flank steak I have ever had in my life. So thank you, Carl Ruiz, and thank you for that tip. I will be experimenting with the very expensive piece of brisket and report back to you. But if any of you are foodies like me, amateur chefs, try the sous vide. You just have to have the time to do it. It makes the world of difference, and everything was perfect. Diving back into the politics, a lot went on this weekend. A whole lot went on this weekend, and much of it had to do with or related to the Alabama Senate seat, the election that's coming up in early December to replace Jeff Sessions because he became the attorney general, obviously. And it centers around this guy, Judge Roy Moore. Moore, a guy who was booted from the state Supreme Court twice because he wouldn't follow the law, kind of important if you're a judge. But Moore claims it's all based on his principles. Now, you know, because you've heard the story that the Washington Post reported, a woman claims years ago, back in 1979, when she was just 14, Moore tried to seduce her and actually was, according to her, involved in horrific improper touching. Whether or not this story is true, there's enough of a stain from that story and the admissions that he actually dated women in their teens when he was in his 30s, there's enough of a problem there that this guy should step aside. There's no way in hell a guy like that needs to represent the Republican Party. So hopefully, when you're listening to this Monday, maybe it's a little later in the day, Mitch McConnell and the GOP will have figured out how to get this guy out of the race. He doesn't belong there. But one of the collateral damage victims on this was Sean Hannity. Hannity, full disclosure, I have known for 20 years. I like him as a person. We don't always agree on everything, but I still like Sean Hannity a whole lot. He's a great guy, has always been there for me, etc. But Hannity, because he interviewed Moore, and I thought the interview was actually pretty strong. He was tough on him. Hannity became the subject of a targeted attack directed by Media Matters for America. If you don't know who Media Matters for America is, I want to tell you it is an evil group funded by George Soros, and their sole intention is to silence conservative voices. That's right. George Soros puts a ton of money into Media Matters for America, and they hire people who do nothing but monitor conservative media outlets and then try and find things on which they can attack them. The scheme against Sean Hannity is just awful. Now, Hannity has handled it brilliantly, if you ask me, by giving away a bunch of coffee makers because the Keurig Coffee Company pulled its ads from Sean's radio show and TV show. Now, Keurig, I'm not a coffee drinker, but Keurig is a company that's been under attack from liberals for years. Why? Because those little plastic cups that they have, those little teeny tiny plastic cups, they've been clogging up the landfills and they don't exactly break down quickly enough for the greenies. So libs have been anti-Keurig for years. And what happens when Keurig pulls out of Sean Hannity's show as an advertiser? They ran out and bought them. Unbelievable, right? A little duplicitous, a little ironic. That the coffee maker you hated forever because it was filling up your precious landfills and ruining the planet, it's now your coffee maker of choice? Back to Media Matters. Media Matters has been working at shutting down conservative voices forever and ever and ever. And so when Sean Hannity interviews Roy Moore and gives him a platform to tell his side of the story now that he's been accused, Hannity becomes the target. And they unleashed a bunch of their bots who went on social media and started pounding the Keurig Coffee Company and got them to remove their sponsorship, as did, I believe it's Realtor.com and three other sponsors. Sean Hannity will survive. Sean Hannity is going after the truth. Media Matters is going after silencing. But that's what the left does. It's not about free speech for them. Unless the free speech is in 100% agreement with what they want, with their agenda. I experienced this myself. Five consecutive CPACs, the Conservative Political Action Conference, 5 years in a row, I was shadowed by a Media Matters weasel. Is it fair for me to call the guy a weasel? Yes, because he is a weasel. He's a total weasel. He would follow me around and pepper me with questions, trying to trap me into saying something that then they could turn into fodder on their website and attack the Blaze, attack me, etc. And I always frustrated the guy until he finally just ran away. But Media Matters is a legitimate threat to American journalism and the truth. It was about a year ago, the Washington Free Beacon managed to get someone inside the Media Matters retreat, and they were pitching donors. They had current and prospective donors at this event in Florida last winter. The Washington Free Beacon, got a hold of this 14-page pamphlet that listed the budget for Media Matters for the year, $13.4 million. They had a staff of 81 who watch and monitor media outlets, conservative media outlets, and it was all about becoming the top watchdog against fake news and propaganda, as they call it. They are totally progressives, totally progressives. They were going after not just the Blaze, but they've been going after Breitbart forever, and this is why I worry about what they call media advocacy. It's about progressive advocacy. That's all they're doing. So Media Matters, they admit to, in this pamphlet, they admit to engaging with Facebook leadership behind the scenes, as well as unleashing their army of bots on other social media outlets like Twitter. The attack on Sean Hannity, coordinated, well-funded, millions provided by people like George Soros. Despite that fact, my money's on Sean Hannity. Let's stay in the political lane for just a little bit longer. I have some other stories to bring up, but I'm fascinated by all of the energy behind Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton both being considered for 2020, especially after SNL went after the Democrats this weekend, basically portraying the Democratic Party as the party of really old white people. It was a hilarious sketch. If you haven't seen it, you need to. But in the case of Biden and Clinton, the two biggest names right now for the Democratic Party have to be Biden and Clinton. She still thinks she's got a shot, despite what Donna Brazile did to blow up her spot with her book. But Joe Biden, he's really playing this. He is out with a book about the death of his son, and God bless him for dealing with the death of his son and being very honest about it. As a human being, how can your heart not go out to Joe Biden? But I don't want him to be president. Biden in 2020, I still think it's a strong possibility. I know Elizabeth Warren wants to run. If Bernie Sanders is healthy, he's going to try. Hillary wants to run. But I think Biden right now has to be the sentimental favorite. He was on the Today Show this morning talking about this with Matt Lauer.
I can tell you honestly, if the Lord Almighty came down, sat in the middle of the table and said, Joe, the nomination is yours, but you have to take it now, I would say no, because I am just, we're working through a whole lot. We're getting there, and I want to focus on my board.
We were in an Irish pub last night, I brought that up last night. I said, are you running? And instead of answering me, you turned to the crowd and you said, what do you think?
I was
and
joking.
You got a big round of applause. Sounded like a little informal polling to me.
No, look, I honest to God haven't made up my mind about that. Right now, I want to focus on the book, and I want to focus on winning the off-year elections.
But you're not closing the door on it?
No, I'm not closing the door. Look, I've been around too long. I mean, I'm a great respecter of fate. But who knows what the situation is going to be a year and a half from now?
Joe Biden has often talked about the fact that he does not have a presidential campaign structure underneath him. However, if this had been September of 2016, after Hillary fainted and Donna Brazile came to him and said, Joe, would you take over the ticket? You and Cory Booker. He would have had the immediate support of the entire Democratic Party. That structure would have easily transferred to him. So who's to say it couldn't transfer again in, as he said, a year and a half? I think Joe Biden's going to run this book tour, and then you're going to start seeing, if his health is still good, candidate Joe Biden 2020. Moving from one book tour to another, I need to talk about this Gene Simmons book called On Power. Gene Simmons, On Power. The former KISS member, wait a second. Are you ever really a former KISS member? Are you a member of KISS for your entire life? He's 68 years old, and I know he's in decent shape, but I don't think he's going to be putting on the spandex or the leather jumpsuit and the makeup and the platform shoes and running around on stage. I'm just saying. But Simmons has a book out with power lessons on how you can be as successful as he is. There's some funny things in here, but there's some things I think I have to agree with. He tells parents, don't give your kids a free allowance. In other words, tie it to something. He said, just giving kids an allowance tells them you're training them to expect that money will just magically appear when they need it. I totally agree with that. When we were kids, we got an allowance, but it was also tied to the fact that we had chores to do. We had things to do. Simmons also says ignore the haters. Worrying about what people think is an impediment to power, he says. He says all the people in the peanut gallery are going to have bad things to say. So work on your goals and don't listen to the noise. I think that's a good idea too. With a couple of good ideas, there's bound to be one or two bad ideas or ideas I think will get Gene Simmons a whole lot of attention. And they have to deal with women and his impression of women. First of all, Simmons says women should use their sexuality as a route to power. He told the New York Post, quote, women have a choice. They can dress in potato sacks, but as soon as they pretty themselves up with lipstick, lift and separate them, and point them in the general direction, they're going to get a response. Guys are jackasses. we will buy them mansions and houses all because of sex. Close quote. I'm not saying he's wrong, but he also says that women can't have careers and kids. He said that women need to, quote, get over your biological urges. It's natural to want to have kids, but sorry, you can't have it both ways. You have to commit to either career or family. It's very difficult to have both. Close quote. Address your cards and letters to Gene Simmons. Gene Simmons is the guy who's telling women you can't have a family and a career. I think there's a whole lot of women out there, really strong women, who have proved Gene Simmons to be incorrect on this topic. Maybe we'll get Gene Simmons on the show. I'll put out a call. Stay tuned. Checking out the history lesson today. On this date back in 1835, Texas, that's right, Texas, a part of Mexico at the time, told Mexico, we're breaking up. We're leaving and we are becoming the Lone Star Republic, because they had one star on the flag of that region, formerly known as Tejas. 10 years later, in 1845, Texas became the 28th state in the Union. On this date in 1927, the Holland Tunnel, which connects Lower Manhattan to New Jersey, it opened. And this is one of the first mechanically ventilated tunnels, underwater tunnels. I know, it's a big deal. It's an architectural miracle. I always used to get nervous driving from New Jersey into New York and back, when you'd be in that tunnel and you'd be stuck in traffic and then water would drip on your windshield. And you're thinking, water? We're under the river. This is not a good sign. Turned out to be condensation most of the time. On this date in 1940, Walt Disney's Fantasia premiered. Have you ever seen the animated film Fantasia? If you haven't, you should. And especially if it is shown with a live orchestra in the theater. It's been done before, very rarely, but it's amazing. And a pivotal moment in our history, it was on this day in 1956, the United States Supreme Court strikes down racial segregation on buses. Guess what? Anybody can sit anywhere. Thank you, Rosa Parks, and thank you, Supreme Court, for making it official. In terms of a word of the day today, I'm going with a simple word that needs no pronunciation help. The word of the day, and it relates to the history lesson, is republic. We are a republic. The United States of America is a republic. We are not a democracy. We have certain democratic principles, but we are not a democracy. We are a republic, and that is a nation in which supreme power, the ultimate power, is held by the people through their elected representatives. So it's different than a king. It's different than mob justice or pure democracy. It is a republic where we charge representatives with the obligation to represent our interests. Our members of Congress include the House of Representatives and the Senate. They make up a critical portion of our republic, and 1/3 of the co-equal branches of government, the legislative, the executive, and of course, the judicial. But a republic is what we are. I was just about to wrap up today when I remembered there is something I'm really ticked off about that we have to address. And it deals with Congress, once again, the House and the Senate, protecting themselves, giving themselves protections that you and I don't have in the regular world, because they're special, right? There's a law that was passed in 1995, been in place since 1995, which protects members of Congress from sexual misconduct and harassment complaints. And there's a lot of them, I'm sure. But in the case of this law, accusers can only file a lawsuit against the accused if they agree to go through months of counseling and mediation. Seriously, the person who believes they were sexually harassed or is the victim of sexual misconduct, before they can file a lawsuit, they have to go through months of counseling and then mediation. There's even a special office set up, a congressional office set up that is supposed to try and resolve these cases so they don't go to court. So they've added another layer to protect themselves from anyone else out there knowing what they've been up to. And if there is a settlement, if they agree on a settlement, the member, the accused, doesn't pay from their own office funds, which would tick me off because that's coming from our money. It comes from confidential payments out of a special secret United States Treasury fund. I'm not making this up. The Washington Post has a full report on this. And there have been payouts. According to the research by the Washington Post, between 1997 and 2014, the Treasury has paid out $15.2 million to 235 people. Now, those aren't gigantic settlements along the lines of what Bill O'Reilly and his like have paid out. But still, that's our money. That's $15.2 million. And what happened to the people who were charged? What happened to the people who were accused of this and then ultimately settled on these workplace violations? They don't break down exactly what they were, but are we all going to say there was no sexual harassment or no hanky-panky going on in Washington, D.C.? I don't think so. Check this out. A 1995 law allowing Congress to once again live outside of the law. Where the hell is the transparency? That's going to wrap up today's edition of Pure Opelka. Tell your friends, tell everybody you know to go get it. And we'll be back tomorrow with the story about what YouTube's doing to get kids addicted to really strange and demented stuff. And a new mystery herb that might be a good cure for pain problems. Or is it the new legal heroin? And even more dangerous. You got to be here. Testudo, my friends. Testudo.